Welcome to the fusion of golf, music, sports, and entertainment. Golf Talk America with Tim Matthews and Frank Bassett. Take it away, boys.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Golf Talk America. Tim Matthews with you, and this is another big week. It's U.S. Open week, and all the big names in the world of golf are in Brookline, Massachusetts, at the Country Club, getting ready for the first U.S. Open there in a long, long time. We'll talk about that coming up in just a little bit. It's the fourth they've held, but they haven't had one since the 80s. That's how long it's been, which is a bit surprising, because usually the USGA kind of goes back to favorites, and certainly in the Northeast, they seem to put them in rotation. But Brookline got out of the rotation a long time ago, and now back into it. So we'll talk about that. We'll also talk with a guy who knows a little something about the U.S. Open, 1975 winner of the Open. That's Lou Graham, is going to be joining us in just a little bit as well. So he'll give us some insight into the pressures and everything else about playing for the national championship and what many people consider the toughest championship to win, the U.S. Open, with those 10-yard wide fairways and the rough up to about knee length. It's going to be a challenge there at Brookline. So a lot of good stuff. Thanks so much for being with us. We do appreciate it. Frank Bassett, as always, in the Nashville studios. And I'm going to say, Frank, you've got the air conditioning turned up a little bit higher than normal, because I've been reading that the center of the heat wave that's going on right now is moving across the country from west to east, is kind of hovering over the Nashville area right about now. Pretty hot there?
105. It's brutal for Nashville, Tennessee. 105 heat index, 99 is the temperature. Yeah. I played yesterday. Played Sunday also in the heat. Played yesterday. And
gotta be careful.
I couldn't do it. I mean, I played horribly, and it was... I won money because I was on the right team, okay?
Because the other guys died? They're all laying on the course?
Pretty much, yeah.
In their pockets?
It's that bad. You've really got to hydrate. But it was brutal. Yeah. I mean, your grips, your hands, you're soaking wet. And, tough stuff here in Nashville, Tennessee. Yeah. I wish I was up in Massachusetts right now.
Yeah, it's going to be a little bit cooler there, at least so far. It is. I don't know for the weekend. I haven't looked at the forecast as far as what the heat is going to get up to, but it is going to move that way. It's been all the way. My wife and I were in Santa Fe last week, and it was hotter than normal in Santa Fe, which is normally, it's at elevation, so it's normally pretty cool there. It wasn't. It was in the upper 80s, hot for there. Came back here, and it's been in triple digits, which is not unusual for Dallas, but it is for maybe June. I think in June it's still normally, in the mid-90s, if you will, still hot. But, boy, it's just – matter of fact, my son from Chicago was here. We played golf, and after the ninth hole, he goes, so how much you want to play? Which he never asked. I go, well, I don't know, like 18? And he goes, yeah, I don't know. I don't know about it. So we played like 13 holes. We played like three or four more, and he just said, I can't. Can't do it. I mean, it's just, it was so hot.
You can't handle the heat.
I mean, he got back to Chicago, and even if you look on the map in Chicago, which again, in the 90s is rare in Chicago, even in the summer, it's been upper 90s the last couple of days, including today. It'll be that way in Chicago, too. So a lot of the country, now kind of the middle part of the country, is getting a lot of heat. So be careful out there if you're playing golf, just like Frank said. Just make sure you get your fluids, because it can kind of sneak up on you. And you
non-alcoholic fluids.
You sit down and you don't get up again. You know, you're like, no, I'm good right here. I don't think I want to move.
Well, it's like when you walk into the clubhouse, it's like walking into a refrigeration unit.
They're hanging meat. You
know? Yeah, exactly.
It's, which is also a weird feeling, right? You're like,
well,
okay,
that's bad for you.
Good for me.
Yeah, you know, to cool down that quickly. So yeah, watch out out there, folks. It's going to be tough. But hey, you have something to do. The Golf Channel's on. There's a lot to talk about.
Well,
people
is.
Getting dissed, and understanding that Jordan Spieth dissed Kevin Na, just didn't acknowledge him, didn't even look at him, and walked away.
Really?
Yesterday. I don't think that's in Jordan's
like in the practice
personality.
Or huh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think he did it on purpose. I can't imagine, knowing what we know about Jordan and how well we know him, he would do that on purpose. So, but of course the media, of course we're part of it, but we're the good media.
Well, it's
but the, and Brooks Koepka. You know, did you see what happened in the interview yesterday with Brooks?
Yeah, I did.
He just told him to basically go to hell.
Yeah. Well, and I'll say this, you know, and I normally defend my brethren in the media, and I've been in it my whole career, so I do kind of have a strong feelings about it. But I don't disagree with some of these guys going, quit beating a dead horse. How many times are you going to ask us over and over and over about this? And I really get, I'm saying angry. I don't get angry, but I get kind of mad and ticked off about it because, A, this is the U.S. Open, and Koepka, I don't disagree, although normally he's a little bit rougher on the edges and a hard guy to like, but he's going, anybody want to talk about a U.S. Open? Anybody want to talk about Brookline? Anybody want to, why is everything about last week's tournament and the LIV Tour and what's going on and who's going and who's not going? And the media does have a way, and this is news as well as sports, to just grab onto something, whether it's January 6th now that every news organization has to talk about forever and ever and ever. Next week, it'll be something else. And this week, the sports media all have to talk about and chime in on what's going on with the LIV Tour. Yeah. And at some point, I would get frustrated too and go, God, I don't care. I want to win a U.S. Open. You know, leave it alone for a minute. They can't do it. And I could see where it's going to get people angry. And then, of course, they write the stories just that way. Like Brooks Koepka is going to be portrayed in the headlines as, oh, Koepka pissed off at the media. Well, it's because after the 93rd question about it, it's like, yeah, I would get pissed off too.
Yeah, I've had enough. I've just had enough about this. Well, let me ask you this. And we're going to go to LIV real quick, and we're going to end it with that. The president is going to Saudi Arabia to what?
Yes.
The president of the United States, not the USGA.
Right.
Biden's going to Saudi Arabia to what? Beg for them to produce more oil, release more oil?
Yes.
What? Okay. I don't know. It's, you know, so...
Oh, continue your thought. Go ahead.
Well, we do business with Saudi Arabia day in and day out, for God's sakes. Let's just quit calling it the Saudi Golf League and blood money and this and that, okay? Let's just stop it. It's a money grab. It's a cash grab. It's a cash run, whatever you want to call it. These boys are going at the end of, you know, end of their basic careers as far as capability of winning major championships and going to just take some money and cash out. So there it is. That's all it is. That's all it is.
But on top of that, I mean, let's be honest, DeChambeau's in the middle of his career. He's not at the end, and so is that the tip of the iceberg of other guys that aren't Mickelson-ish? DJ is what, 38 or 39? So he's certainly within reach of... So there are some guys that certainly can win major championships. I get it. A lot of them are Sergio and Ian Poulter and Lee Westwood-ish. But at the same time, at what point are suddenly golfers the pallbearer, the standard isn't pallbearers, the standard bearers for the morality of athletes? Did anybody get upset that every club manufacturer makes their clubs in China? And you want to get into what China is all about and what they do?
Not PXG.
Okay, but everybody else, you know what I'm saying? Are people protesting about that? Are we suddenly thinking that the golfers are the ones? So I know in today's world of social media and stand up for whatever, that it becomes overbearing. But I'm so confused by why golfers... And again, you're right. Biden is going there. The United States, through every president, doesn't matter, Democrat, Republican, for the last 50 years have had a relationship with Saudi Arabia. They've all known what Saudi Arabia is about and that region of the world is about, their beliefs and everything else. And yet, we've always been allies with them. We've always been friendly. We've gotten oil. So suddenly now the golfers are the ones that are supposed to stand up and go, no, I don't want your money. How many millions of employees are there for oil and gas companies in the United States that make their living off of Saudi Arabia? Are we protesting about that? Do we care?
I know.
It's other
crazy
people making a living doing it. It's suddenly golfers can't be making their money doing it. I don't get the picture that they're painting and why people are buying that to say, yes, you're right. That's just horrible. Come on.
Well, I understand
what they did, but I mean, it doesn't mean that the golfers are the ones that are supposed to change the world because of this.
Yeah, but it's because they are going up head-to-head in competition against the PGA Tour.
Yeah.
And so therein lies the battle. So now the battle lines are drawn, and we'll see what happens. I mean, Monahan had a great interview with Jim Nantz last Sunday.
Well, he had an interview. I would say it's great.
Yeah, it was a decent interview, okay? It wasn't great. You're right. It was decent. Phil's interview in the media center was just absolutely ridiculous. I mean, he didn't answer any questions. He was so lawyered up and coached, in my opinion, he sounded like he was running for office and running for Congress because he didn't answer anything straight. So let's stop it now. Let's talk U.S. Open. I mean, that's what Brooks said, so we're just going to go with Brooks, you know?
So he's trying to do. So here's what Nantz said to Monahan. He asked the question directly, which people have asked, why can't players do both? LIV Tour golf events and PGA Tour events, right? And you and I have talked about this before, Tiger being the guy we'd mentioned the most, that Tiger has left the tour, but other guys have done the same thing, for a outing in Saudi Arabia or in Qatar or some other country where he's gotten an appearance fee. He's done that forever, right? And he was allowed to do it. And they have been allowed, right? They get their 3 or 4 a year that you can go play in. So Nance's question is, why don't you let them play? Instead of saying, no, you play in one, you're done on the PGA Tour, you get to play three or four of those events, and you can come back to the tour. Why not that? Monahan's answer was, quote, I guess I would have to answer that question by asking the question, why do they need us so badly? Meaning the LIV Tour. Those players have chosen to sign multi-year lucrative contracts to play in a series of exhibition matches against the same players over and over again. He said the true competition creates the profile of the world's greatest players, and the LIV players continuing to play on the PGA Tour would be giving them a free ride if they got to play on both. Why couldn't you play on? I don't understand. It's not a very good answer to that question is why I said it wasn't a very good. That doesn't answer why they can't play on both.
It's a competitive league. It's a competitive league as opposed to a one-off event.
Okay, but why does that bother you? If you still want your players to play and the best are still going to be in the PGA Tour, whether they're going to play on an European Tour event, which they're allowed to do, that's competitive, that's a counterpart, an Asian Tour event, they're allowed to do that. Why is this one? And you kind of wonder, is it the Greg Norman effect?
Right?
Do they still have such animosity towards Norman?
Could be. I don't know.
Nicklaus actually talked to them, right? I mean, Nicklaus went and talked to the people putting together the LIV Tour to be their commissioner before Norman. No flack there. That was okay for him to talk, and he said, "No, I'm not really going to do it."
There was some flack. No, there was some flack with Nicklaus companies. I mean, even there. So, you know, I don't have a Ponte Vedra Beach zip code anymore. Yep. So I don't know what's going on at Camp Ponte Vedra over at the PGA Tour headquarters, but there's a lot more to this than we even know. So, and I don't know that we'll ever know everything that's going on down there.
Well, Norman has probably done as best he could to get attention because right? Everybody talking about it. One event, Frank, one event, which everybody, Monahan, those guys are saying, it's an exhibition, doesn't count for anything. It's an exhibition, like, no big deal. Suddenly, everybody in the world knows what LIV Tour and the golf event. So somehow they're getting a lot more attention after one event, Frank, that they've had, that suddenly the PGA Tour has to do all this counter after 100 years of PGA Tour. One event on this tour is getting so. Well, I think they're accomplishing
something. 1968 PGA Tour, yeah, but
you know what I mean.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Anyway, it's U.S. Open week, and last night I watched the greatest game ever played again for about the 100th time or whatever. Yeah. Which is such a great movie about Francis Ouimet, and it was about the tradition of the game and the U.S. Open, what it meant and what it means, and I think this week we're going to see some great golf. We saw some great golf at the Canadian Open. I mean, great competition.
Ouimet was at the same course, correct?
We're at the same course this year, yes.
Ouimet won at Brookline.
Yes.
Did he not?
He did. The country
club.
He was
an amateur.
Brookline. Yes.
Right? He was an amateur?
He was an amateur.
This was like in the 20s?
No.
Losing my time.
1913.
I was that far off. Yeah. Okay, 1913. Yeah.
You young whippersnapper.
Yeah, that was 1920. No, it was 1913.
1913. Damn it.
Yeah, damn it.
Get off my lawn.
World War I. So, I mean, it's kind of a, and now, if I'm not mistaken, and I don't believe that I am, is there's another amateur that is playing. Have you seen the tee times, by the way, Frank?
I have.
Okay. So I got two points to make at that. Well, the first one you're saying about Ouimet is, and maybe I'm wrong, but I don't know that I am, is there not an amateur, Michael Thorne Bjornsson is one of the first guys off. Doesn't he live like across the street? Is he an amateur that plays at the country club all the time? I think he is.
Yes, he is.
If I'm remembering that, it's almost like people are kind of compared with Ouimet, right? As an amateur and a guy who's local that played and won there. My other thing about the tee times, do you see how early the first guys go off?
6:34?
Have you ever? No. I mean, well, depends on the times they're giving us. I guess are these central times or are these local times?
I haven't looked at the PGA Tour.
The first tee time is 5:45 a.m. That's got to be Eastern, I guess, right? That'd be 6:45 Central?
No, 5:45 Eastern would be 4:45 Central.
Earlier. My bad.
So
it's 5:45.
Where'd you go to school?
Have you ever seen a tee time before 6 in the morning?
Yeah, I have.
You have?
Sunrise is earlier there.
I don't know that I've ever seen a golf tee time before 5:45. Well, I think what time are you hitting that
are
range?
Are you looking at the Thursday tee times or are you looking at practice rounds today? Friday tee times.
No, I'm looking at Thursday tee times.
Thursday.
I mean, Thursday, Friday.
I don't know.
And it goes, they switch. Point is, 5:45 is when they're going off.
Hmm.
Holy, I don't know that I've ever seen.
I'll have to take a look at that. I have
one before 5:45. That's an early tee time. You're hitting balls at 3? 4 o'clock in the morning?
I have before, but that was in the front yard or
do you ever play good if you play that early? I don't think
I don't, I don't play good at all after what I did yesterday.
There's a whole other story. Yeah. I don't think I could ever play good if I'm going off at 5:45 in the morning.
You might as well just keep drinking.
Yes. I mean, by,
don't go to bed.
By the time you make the turn, you're just warming up and getting ready to play, and you're like, okay, I'm already 9 over.
Speaking of warming up and getting ready to play,
yeah,
we've got somebody who got warmed up and got ready to play at Medina in 1975 and ended up winning it in the playoff.
That's your little segue right there?
That was it, yeah.
Speaking of getting ready and warmed up to play, all right, well, let's take a break, and we'll get to him. We'll get to him. It's Lou Gramm that Frank is referencing there. He won the U.S. Open in 1975 in a playoff with John Mahaffey. Is that who it was?
Yes, it was.
I believe.
Yes, it was.
In 1975 at Medina Country Club, where we were at the BMW Championship about 2 or 3 years ago.
I guess
right before COVID, right? We went to Medina outside of Chicago, and that's where he won it. So let's take a quick break, and Lou Gramm will join us to talk a little bit more about his experience. Might have been a few years ago, but still his experience at the U.S. Open and what's going on in the world of golf. You're listening to Golf Talk America right here, and Frank and I will be back right after this.
All right, folks, we've got two majors down. Next up, Brookline. We're here. It's the U.S. Open, and from tee to green, get in on the action with DraftKings Sportsbook. New customers can deposit $25 or more, and you get $100 in free bets instantly. Okay, so on the show this morning, you've been listening to it, and we, Tim Matthews and I, my co-host, he picked Scottie Scheffler. I picked Roy McIlroy just to win the tournament. I haven't picked six golfers yet, but here's what you need to do. It's easy to pick six golfers and stay under the salary cap and lock your lineup in before the pros hit the first hole on Thursday, and you could be playing for over $10 million in prizes. Now, if Sportsbook isn't available in your state yet, you can still hit the course for cash with DraftKings Daily Fantasy Golf Contest. So here's what we want you to do, folks. Don't miss the action for golf's third major. Download the DraftKings Sports app now. Use code GOLFTALK at signup. You deposit $25 or more, and you get $100 in free bets instantly. That's Golf Talk only at DraftKings Sportsbook. Minimum age and eligibility restrictions apply. See show notes for details. Check out DraftKings, folks. They're great. You know, folks, I want to tell you about something that I subscribe to and absolutely love. The weather's getting warmer, and we want to spend more time outside and not in the house and in the kitchen and working and cooking and cleaning and prepping and all that. So I want you to go check out one of my very favorite companies, and that's Factor. Factor makes it easy for me to eat clean 24/7 with fresh, never frozen prepared meals that are so delicious you wouldn't believe they're actually good for you. Feel good for summer? Choose from Factor's great keto, smart keto options with built-in portion control. It's a great way to make you feel better and lose weight. They now offer 30 different meals per week, which you can choose from, and they have a variety of new meals every week. And on top of that, they give you the option to change it up and select any plan size between 4 to 18 meals per week. Busy schedule for both lunch and dinner? Well, no worries, because you can add an extra 2 or 3 or even 4 meals to your order. Folks, Factor saves me time by delivering chef-crafted meals to my front door, eliminating the hassle of grocery shopping and the sticker shock that we see in the groceries today. You can save money by using Factor. Believe it. I believe it. I use it, and I save money. They're pre-prepared. They're ready to eat in 2 minutes. That's much faster than ordering out. So they tackle the tough stuff, and I don't have to. Their registered dietitians and expert chefs work hand-in-hand to create meals with nutritious ingredients. So, let me tell you what to do. I want you to head to go.factor75.com/golftalk120. I know that's a lot, so let's talk about it again. That's go.factor75.com/golftalk120 and use code golftalk120 to get, wait for it, $120 off. That's golftalk120 at go.factor75.com/golftalk120 for $120 off. Factor's great, folks. Trust me, I love it.
Mm-hmm. Welcome back to Golf Talk America. Tim Matthews and Frank Bassett with you. And we've been talking about the U.S. Open and things that are going on this week. And, of course, that is the big headline, no matter what anybody else wants to talk about. The U.S. Open being played at the Country Club in Brookline, Massachusetts is what everybody should be talking about and the focus of the golf world. They'll be teeing off on Thursday. Of course, Thursday, Friday, right before the break, Frank and I are talking. It's going to be an early tee time on Thursday that they're going to be going off for some of these guys. Same thing on Friday. Before 6 a.m., they'll be teeing off to get everybody in. So a lot of drama, a lot of excitement about what's happening at the next stop for the PGA Tour players and pro golfers all over the world for the next major. And, of course, the final one will be coming up at the Open Championship next month. So bing, bing, bing. I love the way that it's set up now where you've got one every month, April, May, June, and July for all the majors. But join us now is a guy who knows all about the pressures and the hoopla and the drama around a U.S. Open, and that is 1975 Open winner Lou Graham, who joins us now, ironically enough, from Nashville, just like Frank. Lou, how are you doing today? Thanks so much for being with us.
Well, thank you. Appreciate it. When you mentioned Brookline there, that Brookline in 1963 I played in it. That was my first United States Open, 1963. I had been in the Army, through college there, and been in the Army a little over 2 years there, and I had been out of the service for about a year at that time. And I went up. I was working as a teaching pro up in Maryland, and because I had been stationed in right outside of D.C., and then I go up there and I shoot a nice pair of 79s. And I remember I went back to the club that where I was working. And because the rough area, it was a drizzling rain most all week long. And I went back to the club here and I told the head pro, I said, man, I got a lot of work to do. That grass was so deep and so thick that it was unbelievable. And to show you how long ago it was, I don't know how much golfers you guys are, but and the big talk of the tournament going around was that Juice Burrows wanted to win the tournament. He beat Jackie Cupid and Arnold Palmer in playoffs. And he shot like even par and Cupid. Jackie Cupid shot like 2 or 3 over and Arnold shot 79 in the playoffs. But the grass was so high around the greens, the talk was that Juice Burrows was doing so good out of all the greens, he's using a sand iron to get out of the grass around the greens, and everybody else is using 9 irons and trying to chip from the edge, you know, and I was one of them. Man, you just couldn't chip, and that changed the whole game of golf, what everybody played around the green, because I went home and I got my sand iron out and started chipping around the greens there, and it made all the difference in the world. Now everybody uses a sand iron out of the high grass right around the greens.
Lou, I'm glad you said that, because you're familiar with Bluegrass Country Club up here in Hendersonville, Tennessee, where I'm a member. And yep. You know about our rough, I'm sure. Known all over the state as one of the toughest golf courses in the state. And yesterday, yep, I was in that rough constantly, and I did exactly what you just said. I was trying to use a 9-iron or an 8-iron to chip and run, and I had enough double bogeys for a year yesterday, so I'm done.
Is that right? At Bluegrass, you know, one summer I worked up there as a lifeguard.
You worked as a lifeguard at Bluegrass?
Yeah, I sure did. But the first Bluegrass invitation that I won there, I was an amateur. I don't know, I was like 19 years old, 20 years old, whatever it was. I forget what year it was. It was a long time ago. Yeah. I'm 84 now. Bluegrass has a warm spot in my heart. Yeah, Bubba Johnson was the head pro there.
Yeah.
I don't know whether you ever remembered Bubba or not. He died quite a number of years ago.
I met him a long, 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 long time ago. But
I used to caddy for him at Shelby Park before he ever even turned pro.
What Lou's talking about, for our listeners and for Tim, Shelby is where Brant Snedeker grew up playing golf here in Nashville, Tennessee.
Well, and, so did I.
And you. I want to back up to something you said, though, for our listeners. You said you were drafted and served right outside of D.C. You kind of glossed over what you actually did. You did something that is one of the greatest honors you can ever do, and that you were one of the military members who served at the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier. Is that correct?
Well, I didn't walk the tomb, but yes, I did. I did. I was in there, and Honor Guard Company is called.
Yep.
And I came in, got it was kind of funny how I wound up being there. When I was up and went to Fort Knox, Kentucky, and you're signing going in the to everything, goes in, filling all the papers out, and got somebody working with you, telling you, a sergeant telling you what to do and this and that. And this young sergeant says to me, he said, "What would you like to do while you're in the service?" And I said, "I like to play basketball and golf. I want to get in special services." And he started laughing. He fell out of his chair laughing. He said, "Man, we're going to teach you to be a trained killer. What are you talking about?" And I said, "Well, you asked me what I wanted to do." And so he said, "You know what? Wait a minute. He got out this book and was reading. He said, "Huh?" He said, "Well, you look like you're the right size. You got the right look. You got to have at least 3 years of college." I said, "Yeah." And there, and when he said, "There's a place up there at Fort Myers that they got up there where people then come in up there." And he said, they work 24 hours and they're all 48. And I said, "Whoa, that sounds like a good job, you know." And he said, "Okay." He said, "I'm gonna put it down." He said, "Just see what happens." Now this, and then I left Fort Knox and went to Fort Jackson, South Carolina. And then we was over there for 8 weeks on top of the other. And so when it was time to leave, they came over the board of speakers and they said, "Get everybody, go down to the main office down there, look on the bulletin board and tell you where are you going." I went down there and there was a list up there of about 70 or 80 names. I went all the way down the list. The name wasn't known. They were all going to Korea. And I started looking down. I went down again. I said, "Well, where am I going?" And all of a sudden, I looked there, and there was a little paper over the side, one name on the side. I looked up there, and there was my name right up there. I was going up to the Army Guard Company in Fort Myers, Virginia. And I said, "This guy got me, and I don't know what it was." So I went up in, I went through training and came out of training, and I was in the, they put me in the casket bearers is called.
Yeah.
Not casket bearers. No. What is it? 21 gun salute, whatever it is, for everybody that bears. I can't even think of the name of it now. But and so I go in for training and death to learn how to, you're on a 6-man firing party.
Right.
And so we're going through that. And I've been up there I'm just ready to get started. I've been there through all the training. I've been there 3 weeks. And captain called me down to the office, says, "We're changing you. We're going to send you to training, walking the tomb guards." And I said, "Oh, no, I just got married, a couple of months ago. And I don't want to do that if I don't have to, And he said, "Oh, I didn't know you were married." He said, "No, married, we don't allow them to walk anymore. It was too hard on the marriages. You work one day and off 2 days and whatever, but you're gone one out of every 3 days." And so I went, whoosh, that was good. So they put me back in the firing party, and that's where I wound up going through the whole deal. But you spend a lot of time doing a lot of different things. They parade all over the thing, work funerals and everything, and then work around the tomb, do everything. But
yeah,
it was a different kind of job being in the service. But I got to play a lot of golf and played on the basketball teams and golf teams.
Yeah, y'all, you won, I think y'all's – your military golf team won the inter-service championship?
Yeah, we won the inter-service championship. Yeah,
yeah,
sure did.
Well, let me ask you this, Lou. You've been a great golfer all your life, and a lot of wins, and a U.S. Open, which is huge. It's the most difficult tournament to win, period, in golf. Set up the most difficult. What was it like, or what is your opinion, I should say, regarding the equipment that you had to play when you won in 1975 with, I guess, probably a Tour Bellotta ball at that point in time, and not so great golf clubs, and the equipment that these boys are using today, and the way the courses are set up are basically the same length today. So,
well, the courses are a little longer, but they drive, I was just, all the years I played, I averaged every year about 252, and I was about in the middle of the pack, say about 50th in driving distance. And well, I remember Jack Nicklaus, who's a good friend of mine, he won the driving the average 2 years in a row, and he averaged 276 and 277 in those years. Yeah. And now, I mean, if you 276, 277, you're in the grammar school league.
That's pretty much true.
I'm watching that yesterday. Roy McIlroy, he was hitting his tee ball consistently 325 to 340.
Yeah, that's just crazy long.
You know, the ball and the club and everything is just, we had old beat up golf clubs and you know, the wooden headed clubs, you know, and it was a different game, altogether.
We're talking with Lou Graham, who won the 1975 U.S. Open at Medina Country Club. So tell us a little bit about that week for you, Lou. That's the highlight of your career. You won six times on the tour, but the 75 U.S. Open, a lot of drama there at Medina. Tell us about it. And Frank and I did some shows. We were there for a week during the BMW Championship a few years back. Beautiful facility there at Medina.
Actually, now this is show how times have changed. You say I won six times. Now the kids say that I've won seven times about 7-8 years ago that did that. Any kind of team event that they have now, you know, these team events in the fall of the year where they're two-man teams, they go down as a win. Well, Johnny Miller and I won the World Cup in Bangkok, Thailand in 1975, and they posted that down as my seventh win.
Oh, about, I don't want to shortchange you. Okay, yeah. It's seven.
30 years later, they posted down as a win.
Well, let me ask you this. I'm glad you brought that up. A lot of our listeners and the younger listeners, you know, they know your name, I mean, and your history. They know Johnny Miller's name. Was Johnny Miller, in your opinion, as great a golfer as there was in the day? And could he have had a career much like a Nicklaus if he had not gotten hurt?
Well, had not gotten what? He
had not, you know,
injuries. Got
injuries and gotten out of golf.
Yeah, well, you know, golf gives you a lot of injuries. I've had seven surgeries over the years myself.
Oh, Lord.
And physically, it can be a very tough game. You know, Johnny was a great player, but no, he was never a Jack Nicklaus.
Okay.
You know.
Interesting. A lot of people say that, and that's why I wanted to get your opinion since you knew him and played with him. And
yeah.
Lou, who was your favorite, or who was the most fun to play golf with in your era?
Well, when you walk out on the course and you go to play in the tournament, now, fun is a different situation. That's for practice rounds. When you walk out in the tournament, it's different. Always one of my favorite players to play with in tournaments. I love playing with Gary Player, and I like playing with Gene Littler years ago. I'm sure you know the name Gene Littler and everything.
Oh, absolutely.
He had a great golf swing. I like to watch him. He was a really easygoing, nice guy, you know, and I enjoyed playing with him very much, both of them, you know, all of them. I got along good. Jack Nicklaus is a good friend of mine, and like, we used to get out there and kidded with him a lot and everything, but they're all different, you know, different guys get out there and play different ways, and but not many of them, you know, not many of them are what I would call a pain to play with, you know. They play hard. And it's amazing how it goes. If they play good, they're nice guys. If they don't play good, they're not very nice guys.
I've been there with the local players here in Nashville, too, that act that way.
Yeah. I couldn't have missed you there. I couldn't understand you there. It went out.
Oh, that's okay. What I was saying is there are a lot of players around here, amateurs, that I have an opportunity to play with. And, of course, I'm in my upper 60s. So, you know, we up at Bluegrass, there are a lot of guys at our country club and down at Legends and your neck of the woods there, close to Franklin, that aren't nice guys when they don't play well either. We won't mention any names, but we know a few of them used to drive race cars and things like that. So,
oh, yeah.
And we won't mention that name. But
Okay.
Lou, let me ask you this. Now, the U.S. Open this year is, you know, of course, at Tim's neck of the woods, Tim's from the Chicago area, so Medina Country Club. I'm sorry, at Brookline, but when you played at Medina Country Club is where I was going. You've played Brookline also. How do you compare the two U.S. Open courses, Medina against Brookline? Any level of difficulty or ease of play?
Well, I've only played there at Brookline at one time, so I played two rounds competitively on the death ball. Times I've been there, so don't really know it that much. But when I've seen it on TV, it looks hard and Medina is a great golf course, and no question about that. But, you know, when I went there to Medina, I had played it once or twice in different kind of outings, went there for different things. But I became very comfortable, to be honest to goodness, I don't know whether it's right to compare it, but it reminded me very much of Shelby Park Golf Course.
Ooh.
It had a lot of trees on it, and man, you get on the tee and you're looking down the fairway, and the trees are lining both sides, most of the fairways up there at Medina. And I really liked that. I always felt it was easier to drive at a fairway lined by trees than it was the one that was just wide open and nothing around it.
I'm not going to disagree with the U.S. Open winner, but you know where I play golf, up here at Bluegrass, and I'd just as soon see most of the trees gone, to be honest, and the rough. But Tim, I don't mean to take over the conversation. Jump in there.
That's okay. No, I'm curious. So again, we're talking with Lou Graham, 1975 U.S. Open champion. What about the pressure of it all, Lou? I mean, everybody now talking about the U.S. Open and Phil trying to win, and all the other guys that have their reasons for wanting and needing to win a U.S. Open and the competitiveness of it. What was it like for you that week? Did you feel like you came into that week playing well? Did you feel confident that you could actually win a U.S. Open?
I'll tell you the honest truth. I came into the week struggling. I had played very poorly the week before in Philadelphia. I remember that. And I came over there, and everybody was experimenting at that time with their drivers, the length of the drivers. Some people were going to 43-inch was the standard length of a driver, but people were going with 44, 45, 46-inch drivers to pick up extra yardage, and you definitely could. And I had upped my driver from 43 to 45. And I was playing, and I came over there, and I had all those trees and everything. I thought, hey, this is just like Shelby. I never played Shelby with this long driver. So I went inside into the bag room. This was back before they even had these trailers outside doing all this work on clubs and everything. I went in there and I talked to the guy back there and told him I wanted to cut my grip off. And he gave me the equipment to use and everything. And I said, I need a saw. I'm going to cut off my shaft of my driver. And this was on Wednesday morning before the tournament was to start, the next day. And I took the grip off, cut off 2 inches off there, down to 43-inch, put everything back together, and went out and played 9 holes and drove the ball good. And I went, wow, I've been wasting this time playing that other club, and here I am back what I used to use. And I drove good in the tournament, and, boy, it gave me a lot of confidence. I thought, right back. Every time I went out to play, I feel like I was at home, So I think it meant an awful lot to me winning the tournament.
Well, it was a playoff that you had to win it in. There was some great golf, obviously, being played around you, and different players that were at their peaks at that time. Nicklaus, of course, there, and Johnny Miller, and Watson, and Trevino, and all these other guys. What was it like being around that group of golfers? Do you feel like you were closer than maybe today's golfers were? Did you travel together? Did your wives socialize together? Was it a different feel than you think it is today on the PGA Tour?
No, I don't think so, really, to tell you the truth. That we, guys traveled together very little back then, whatever. A lot of people drove, traveled all the time. Well, I was traveling with my wife and two little girls, and we started out, they were like about 2 and 3 years of age, I guess, would have been the age she's starting out and everything. But golf is an individual game. You stay, by yourself. You have everybody winds up having a buddy that they play practice rounds with usually, or something like that. But I think it's still very similar and everything. Guys get along. A lot of people don't know it, but the PGA Tour Wives Association that they have out there now, does all these different things. My wife was one that was the first president. She was president for 2 years, and she started the whole thing up. She got Nancy Reagan, who was the president's wife at that time, to come to the first opening little tournament that the Tour Wives had, and the players, all the pros, caddied for their wives, and they played 18 holes and everything, and all of them, but she started all up and made it worked and everything, put it all together, and it's still going, you know.
Good for
everything.
Her.
She did a big thing on that. I mean, spent hours and hours working at it. And they came up with the thing that they got, came up with the rug, decided they wanted to try to use a needlepoint rug or however, whatever it is, and got all the wives to give them a 12-inch square thing to needlepoint their husband's names in where, you know.
Like a quilt,
Yeah, a quilt. That's a quilt. Like, can you think what it is? And so she got different people, and in each corner of it, she got the four presidents' wives that had the presidents who had played golf when they were in the White House, and they got the president to sign their signature on each one of them. Now, each one of the pros signed their signature, and then they needle pointed it all together, and you know, and did it. It's in kind of white and cut off, and then they sold tickets at every tournament for a year. Chances for a draw to see who would get the thing, you know. They charge like about, I think it seems like it was like $25 or $30 to get a ticket to get in the drawing for it, something what it was. And they sold tickets all week, all year long. Whenever they had every week, they'd have about six or eight of the women out there working at different things, whatever, and selling the tickets and everything. And they wound up having the drawing. In North Carolina, we were playing over in Greensboro at the time. We went to the University of North Carolina. They had Arnold Palmer and Gary Player over there. Went over. Most of the guys were playing in the pro-am at the time. They had all their wives. They went to the drawing and everything. They drew this name out. When you know that a guy in Japan won the thing. He had come to one of the tournaments and had bought a ticket. He had bought three or four or five tickets or whatever, and he won the thing. And so they called him. Gary could speak some Japanese. And he called him, and he talked to him on the phone over there and everything. And he was trying to talk him into leaving the rug here in the United States, and they were going to put it in the Golf Hall of Fame, whatever. He said, no, I own two golf courses here in Japan. He spoke kind of broken English. I own two golf courses here in Japan. It's going to stay 6 months at one, and then it'll go 6 months at the other, and then 6 months back and forth.
Good
and
for him.
What I've heard people say, he still got the thing.
I'll be darned. So
we never got it back. Lost the whole thing. But they made a lot of money out of it.
Very nice. Yeah.
And good for your wife. They're still running, doing things like that now, yeah.
Good deal. Well, Lou, we do appreciate your time so much. I'm sorry you haven't been able to get out and play, you said, in the last year or so, but hopefully the weather will cool off a little bit and you can get out there in the Nashville area and enjoy the game of golf and play a little bit more. We have enjoyed our time talking to you and giving us a little bit of walk down memory lane of winning the 1975 U.S. Open at Medina. And continued good health and the best to you and your wife, okay, Lou?
Well, I appreciate it, Tim and Frank.
Thank you, Lou. We appreciate it. I hope to see you soon. Let's make it a point to visit sometime when we can.
All right, we'll have to.
All right, Lou. Take care of yourself.
All right, thank you.
Uh-huh. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Lou Gramm, 1975 U.S. Open champion.
That's kind of cool to go down history. I mean, we really got off of golf a lot, but talked about some of the history of the PGA Tour and the PGA Tour Wives Association. And you know, I think that's good for our listeners to hear sometimes is where this game was and what it took to get it to where it is today.
Yeah,
and it took the wives getting involved and being part of the travel crew and all that. And that Wives Association is still very viable and active on the PGA Tour.
Yeah, and they do an awful lot of stuff. They do an awful lot of work for charities that people don't hear about or see about because their husband kind of gets all the attention. But, yeah, the wives do a great job. It's kind of interesting. Lou's wife started it.
Yeah.
The union, if you will, for the wives.
Well, so that was the management team for the players, basically, is what it was.
Yeah.
It was the honeydew team, But they do a lot of good
Pretty
work.
Cool.
You're absolutely right. But it was cool to talk to Lou. Lou's getting up in age, and you know, but
84 years old.
But to still
at Medina, when we were there, like I said, we were there for the BMW Championship, and our good friend Brendan Sweeney grew up. What do you say? A block away.
Oh yeah,
I mean, he was right there.
He and
his brothers would
there.
Jump the fence all the time to go watch and play golf at Medina. And I remember when we were there, and he talked about how he loved the tree line fairways. Remember how the superintendent or somebody told us they had cut down like 1,000 trees. They still had 2,000, but they cut down a lot of trees. Because remember, even Brendan would say, oh, remember here on 17, there was a big oak tree that hung over and they cut. He knew all the different trees and they were gone there because they had too many. And that's, of course, what's happened. A lot of courses, they just cleared it out a little bit. Apparently at your club, they haven't cleared out quite enough of them.
They've cleared out a lot, but it's he knows bluegrass. So I didn't realize he was a lifeguard at our country club back in the 50s.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's a hard course. I mean, they used to play the Nashville Open there at Bluegrass Yacht and Country Club. And it's a tough, tough, tough golf course. I mean, there's nothing easy about it whatsoever. And trust me, yesterday was just – it was just hell day for me.
He finished runner-up at another U.S. Open at Southern Hills.
He did.
In 1977.
Yeah.
Lou Gramm did. So he got the one championship, and then he lost in 77, was runner-up in 77 to Hale Irwin, I believe it was, at Southern Hills. So
well, he's buddies with Guy Berger, too. And, you know, Guy Berger shot the first 59 in Memphis, Tennessee, at the Colonial Country Club for it used to be the Danny Thomas St. Jude tournament.
Memphis Open, yes.
Memphis Open, yeah.
And yeah, well,
anyway, I was there at
nice
that
to talk to him.
That tournament. Yeah, it was good to talk to Lou. It's good to hear his voice. He still remembers a lot of stuff. You know, that's great.
Yeah.
It's just like our friend Burton. You know, your good friend Burton Gilliam, and our friend.
Yeah.
They're getting up in age, but it's fun to go back and hear a little bit of what it was like for them. And
well, what
275, Nicholas? 276.
Yeah, the yardage thing is kind of. And I think if you look back, we'd have to do some research here. But if we look back, my guess would be today's tour courses average probably in the 7,200-7,300 yard range, right? We know there are some that they extend way out to 7,600 yards, and then there are Pebble Beach that'll never be longer than it is, which is about 6,800 or 6,900.
Yeah.
But I'll bet you back then he said they were shorter, and they had to been. I mean, you can't hit a 270 like he's talking about. And he said he was in the 250-258 range or something like that, and he said about middle of the pack when it came. If you had a 258 on a
you couldn't 400, play
490 yard par four today, I mean, you'd be hitting driver three wood.
Driver three wood.
On every par four. So, that part is interesting to see that the yardage has. Now, I think there's no mistaking, too, and I was going to ask him this, not to get critical of the athletes back then, but I think there's no denying there are better athletes playing golf today than there were back then.
Yeah.
And even if you look at them, and again, not being disparaging to anybody, but some of them, you know, quite a few of them, even Jack in the early days was chubby, didn't look to be all that athletic necessarily, could certainly swing a golf club. And now you see, and maybe Tiger's one of the first to kind of come along, Greg Norman probably.
Well, Gary Player really started athletes, it, didn't he?
And could have, well, Player was always a very health conscious guy. I don't know if he was I say petite, he wasn't petite, but he wasn't a very big guy. I don't know in many other sports he could have played. Probably soccer or something like that. I'm just saying that the Dustin Johnsons and Tigers and these guys, they're very good basketball players and soccer players, and they played lacrosse in college, and Brooks Koepka could have played baseball. And that's what you see more of, and so that probably adds to some of the length as well. That's my point. In addition to the equipment, these guys are just ripping the ball, right? I mean, Rory, when he talks about how far Rory's hit it, look how hard they swing. And you look at those old videos, Frank, and even when we talk to older guys, including losing my mind here. Our friend down in Houston, Players Champion, Elkington.
Steve Elkington?
Sorry, Elkington, yeah.
Yeah.
You talk to those guys, they weren't taught to swing that hard. So you watch them swing, they had very nice swings, but very controlled, right? Now it's violent. These guys swing. That's where you get a lot of distance, too, is that club head speed. It'd be interesting if they had the numbers back then, right? If you had Lou Gramm or these guys in, what was their club head speed? What was their ball speed? It had to have been minimal compared to what today's guys are.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. If you had TrackMan back then, you could see. But unbelievable stuff.
Versus DeChambeau, I mean, can you imagine trying to hit the ball? You know, with a clubhead speed of 145 miles an hour, they probably had a clubhead speed of 104 miles an hour, right, or something.
Yeah,
and you're going to hit as far as that's going to take you. So anyway, nice to talk to Lou. Back to the U.S. Open at the Country Club.
Yes.
Somebody said, and I think it might have been Rory, they asked him what he thought about the course, and they said it was a very good analogy. He said it's a combination of Bethpage with the exposed rock, trees, thick rough and all that, the Bethpage U.S. Open, with the greens of Pebble Beach. Smaller greens, tight greens that you have to get to. So if that is indeed an accurate, which I've got to trust Rory, that's a tough golf course. Yeah. You combine Bethpage and Pebble Beach's greens.
No,
I can see where it's going to be a challenge. Yeah, it's going to be It's going to be fun. Who do you like? Who do you like this week?
Rory McIlroy.
Oh, do you?
I have to. I have to. I
think, back-to-back, you know, Open Championships.
Well, he just...
Canadian and then the U.S.?
Yeah.
You think
I
so?
I mean, yeah, I do. I think he's on his game. And he's playing really well, and he has an incentive to play well right now. Yeah, I like Rory.
Rory's... I was just watching earlier Golf Channel, and back a little bit to the Live Golf, and it showed John Rahm, who was pretty adamant yesterday in his interviews against the Live Tour that he's not interested, he doesn't want to do it, blah, blah, blah. Didn't disparage anybody, but, you know, you can kind of tell there's almost sides being drawn, and you know, people like it, some people don't. They are not crazy about you maybe going against the PGA Tour, and I'm sure the guys that have played in the Live Tour are like, I'm not against anybody. I'm just trying to do the best I can
right.
for me, my family, whatever. But it showed Mickelson and Rahm actually talking on the practice screen today before their practice round. So that's interesting. I don't know if Rahm was going to hold a grudge or not, but he and Phil were at least talking and getting along. That whole thing is not going to go away, Frank, because it's
not. Well, Keegan Bradley was always close to Mickelson, too, and I haven't heard anything about their interactions this week.
Yeah, so I don't know. I mean, if you look at the pairings, some people made a little bit of a, not a joke necessarily, but they kind of said, well, it's interesting. USGA has always been a little bit aggressive in their pairings as far as having interesting pairings together. You've got Gary Woodland, Justin Rose, and Bryson DeChambeau playing together. All right, so Woodland's always been old school. He said, I'm not going to play. I'm very happy. I'm going to stay on the... So are they doing some of these to see if there's any interaction going on? Patrick Reed is playing with Tommy Fleetwood. I think it's going to be interesting. By the way, Terrell Hatton, Sergio Garcia, and Kevin Na, all in one group. All three of those were Live Golf, are they not?
Yeah.
Is that right? All three of them played last week.
Yep.
Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, you know, it'll be an interesting, people are going to be asked the questions, you know, and Brooks Koepka, by the way, has not said one way or the other. His brother played last week in the Live Tour event. People are speculating that Brooks, who's never acted like he cares, the kind of the thing that Monahan talks about is, do you want your history, your legacy? That's the word everybody's using. And then you've got to play on the PGA Tour. You've got to do this and this and this. Brooks has kind of always been the anti-guy, right?
Yeah.
So Brooks might not care about his legacy. It may not.
He cares about majors is what he cares about.
Yeah. And if $200 or $300 million is getting thrown at these guys that are at that level, that's like their bonus. That's their signing bonus is $200 or $300 million. And you can still play in the U.S. Open, British Open, Masters.
Well, that remains to be seen because the official World Golf rankings control that. And it has to be a 72-hole event to get official World Golf ranking points.
Yeah.
So now what's going to happen?
Yeah.
Live Golf is 54 holes.
Yeah.
I just don't know what's going to happen with that.
Now, if you've won a Masters, I would assume they're always going to invite you back. I don't know that that's going to change. We'll see. If you're a past champion, they've always been invited back. You certainly have exemptions if you've won recently, like Phil won a PGA Championship. He's got a 5-year exemption for all the majors as far as that rule goes, unless somebody changes something.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you're right, though. If you're one of those other Oosthuizen or somebody who hasn't won a major, doesn't have an exemption, would you be able to qualify? I don't know. Because your World Golf rankings, as you said, and they're already off the FedEx Cup, right? So if you played in the Live tournament, they're not going to include you in the FedEx Cup points.
Nope. So you don't play in the Tour Championship.
Yeah.
So, but that was the big money at the end of the rainbow was the Tour Championship money. And that's
sure.
$10 million, $15 million, $20
million. Yeah, they're like $15 million if you win that whole ball of wax.
So, yeah. So, but what's 10, 15 million as opposed to 200 million?
Exactly.
That's a big difference.
Yeah. So it'll keep coming up. I mean, that's going to be a subject that my gut is, if I had to say where we're going to be in a year or two, I think they're going to have some kind of, if indeed everybody talks this way, the USFL, XFL football leagues all acted like, oh, we got plenty of money. And if you remember Vince McMahon wanted to start the XFL, and he had billions of dollars. So there was not going to be a money issue. Suddenly there was not attendance. There wasn't TV contracts, and he pulled a plug on it. So it's like, you can say you've got all the money in the world, and the Live event does say that. And then Norman has said that they're willing to write checks for like 10 years without much sponsorship or anything else. They'll just go in the hole just to try to draw these players in. If that indeed is the case, then I think there's got to be some kind of a at least discussion of a AFL-NFL merger to create a NFL, ABA, NBA, something where you can kind of go, okay, let's not, because I don't think it benefits anybody to be at war, right? To say, okay, no, you're on this side and you're on this side and you guys can't be together and we hate you and you hate us. I don't think that benefits people. I think that at some point you go, all right, if they are going to indeed stick around, meaning the live tour, let's see if we can find a way to make it good for everybody. Yep. So, you know, maybe you'll. In the meantime, the U.S. Open is getting started. And you said you like Rory, huh?
I do. I like Rory. Who do you like?
You know what? I'm crazy as it may seem, and it may seem a little bit crazy because he's, and I'm not going out on a limb. I like Scottie Scheffler, and it's hard to say, well, that's a reach. He's not the favorite. Rahm actually is the odds-on favorite to win. Yeah. Scheffler's number one in the world, so it's not like I'm really going on a big branch here. I just think Scotty seems to, and we'll see, but he seems to enjoy the big stage, you know. And there was a really good article here in the Dallas Morning News on Monday of this week that talked about Zalatoris and Spieth and Scheffler all kind of growing up in the same. All three won U.S. junior amateur titles. They play together all the time. They play money games together. And those three guys and how the three of them are all trying to kind of keep the legacy of Byron and Hogan and yeah. Trevino and other Dallas area guys. Very, very interesting to see the competitiveness amongst them. But anyway, the point of a lot of that was that Scheffler has always loved going up against the better players. When he was 14, he wanted to play against the 20-year-olds, you know, in yeah. practice and everything else. He always wanted to. So I'm going to, you know, again, that's not a big reach, but I like Scheffler. I like where his head's at. Yep. Well. Which means that Mark Leishman is going to win the U.S. Open because it'll never be somebody we play.
Are the amateur. The amateur, yeah. as they
that
say.
That would be
in
me,
the,
wouldn't it?
Greatest game ever played. That would be fabulous.
Thorbjornsson.
I don't think we have a shot at that, but.
No. There's a few amateurs in there, and that's kind of what it's been known for, right? You get the handful of guys that qualify and that get in, and it's just such a tough competitive thing to see. And that rough is like you said, the way that they have to play that. If we remember DeChambeau going with the strategy of saying, okay, what is it, wing foot?
Yeah.
I'm just going to blast it down there, and then I'll come out with a wedge. I'll be in the rough a lot, and he was, but I can still get to the green with a 9-iron or a wedge from 130 yards. Whereas you're back at 190 yards, maybe you're in the fairway, but I'll take an extra 50 yards, 60 yards, and
gouging
come out of the rough. And it worked for him.
It worked. Right? Yeah, it did.
Interesting, too, without trying, I don't mean to go backwards too much, but when Lou Graham said that was a Julius Boros that pulled out a sandwich in a thick rough at Medina? Is that what he was talking about?
Yes,
at Medina. Or Brookline.
Medina? No, Medina. He was talking about Medina.
That they had the thick rough, and he, I guess back then, everybody just automatically would either have a pitching wedge or a 9-iron and kind of gouge it out, which, as you know, if it's thick enough, it'll break your wrist, right, trying to create speed to get through that thick
grass.
Grabs
that hosel, yeah.
He just did like a butter knife, right, and he came in with his sand wedge, and all of a sudden everybody's like, and that's kind of a neat, innovative thing that nobody had done that before, and everybody's going, what the hell's he doing over there? How's he getting the ball up in the
air? That's like
when
people started putting with their hybrid off the green.
Yeah, yeah.
So
somebody came up with something different. That's kind of interesting. So
yeah, I've used every club in the bag for everything.
Yeah, and the ball stays in the rough.
It stays right there. Yesterday
I looked down,
hell.
It's still there. Yeah, what the hell's going on?
Oh, well.
All right.
Well, it's been
I
fun.
Think we're done.
I think we're done. I think we got to get out of here. That was good. Yeah. It's good to hear from Lou.
Yep.
Sounds good.
And, God bless him and his wife.
Yeah.
As they
have some health trouble. Yeah.
Get up there, but all the best to them. So thanks, everybody, for listening. We do appreciate it. Be sure to check out Club Corp, one of our favorite sponsors, clubcorp.com. Now changing their name to Invite. So you'll see that slow change as they're making the name change. But clubcorp.com, check them out. Find a course near you. Play it. And you get privileges all over the country. Also, French Lick will be there in a couple of about 7 or 8 weeks. We'll be at French Lick.
Yep.
Check out French Lick Resort if you're ever looking for a great place to play, a vacation getaway. French Lick, Indiana is a wonderful choice. For Frank Bassett, I'm Tim Matthews. Thanks for being with us. Join us next time right here on Golf Talk America.